the lens through which I would like to view this weekend's practices. Five spiritual faculties, or the five controlling faculties. It's important to hear these teachings because it helps us, it gives us a lens through which to monitor our own practice. Faculties are, the first is sadda, or faith, as I mentioned. Confidence sometimes. The second is wirya, energy. The relationship between sadda and wirya is if you have faith, or if you have some level of confidence, or to the degree you have confidence, you're willing to make effort. The third of these qualities of mind is sati, or awareness, mindfulness, and the relationship between wirya and mindfulness is the more skillful or balanced the effort and the energy, the more mindful one becomes. The fourth of the controlling or spiritual faculties is samadhi, often translated as concentration, but I prefer to actually call collectedness of mind. Concentration implies a kind of a jamming of the mind, a condensing of the mind. And in fact, that's not an accurate description of what samadhi is. Samadhi is more a collectedness of mind, a stability of mind. And it is the relationship between sati, mindfulness, and samadhi is that the degree of collectedness or stability of mind is directly proportional to the continuity of the mindfulness. The more continuous the mindfulness, the more collected or stable the mind, the more samadhi. And the fifth faculty of mind, fifth controlling faculty, is panya, or wisdom. We can understand it as knowledge initially, or we can understand it as intuitive, empirical understanding of one's experience, and it can mature to the confirmation of the Buddha's teachings of liberation, a very refined, wise understanding of the mind and the nature of reality. The relationship between samadhi, collectedness of mind, and panya, wisdom or understanding, is the more stable the mind, the more collected the mind, then the more powerful the mind. And the more powerful the mind is, the more clearly it sees and the more detail it sees in what is being looked at. And in the clarity of the seeing, there is a refinement of your understanding of what is seen. It is this refinement of understanding that is wisdom. With wisdom, with the gradual unfolding or awakening of wisdom and the evolving of wisdom or the arising of wisdom in the mind, we feel more confident. We feel more faith. We feel more inspired, in a way, to practice. And in this way, the relationship between panya, the fifth, and sadda, the first, is again a cause-effect relationship. And through this cause-effect relationship of the development of the five faculties and the increasing kind of a cyclic development and a maturation, there is a gradual bringing of the faculties into balance. And when they are mature and brought into balance, then practice, well, it's not quite right to say it happens by itself, but it happens with less struggle. And the confidence is stable, the energy is effortless, the awareness is ongoing, the samadhi is experienced as a balance of tranquility and alertness, and the wisdom is very subtle and evolving or unfolding of its own. And in this way, we gradually learn about ourselves, about the generic nature and functioning of the mind, and how to free the mind from conditioning. And this is the whole direction that we're moving, is to move the mind in the direction of understanding the conditioning that is imposed on what appears to be my mind through genetics, through family conditioning, cultural conditioning, spiritual conditioning, religious conditioning, the conditioning of just being a human being, which is a limitation in some ways. And to see through these conditionings, not to get rid of them, but to see their limitation, and to not be bound by those limitations. In this way, we can truly experience the liberation of the mind while firmly embedded in our householder life as 21st century Western educated American or Canadian or European men and women. And still, we can taste and experience or have the understanding of what the liberated mind within our lifestyle really means. I mentioned the five spiritual faculties as the lens through which we will be talking about our experiences this weekend. And I want to begin in speaking a little bit about Sadda, or what is often translated as faith, that develops in time to confidence, and with real wisdom then becomes unshakable confidence. And I want to begin by telling a little story. I, in my mid-20s, living in a commune in central Maine, and wasn't doing much with my life, as little as possible, actually. And one of the women at the commune saw a book and wrote away to the author and got some information and found out that there was a Vipassana retreat or an insight retreat happening near where we lived in central Maine. And I don't know what she told me, but I thought she said, oh, I'm going on a two-week vacation. Of course, my whole life was a vacation, really. I wasn't working. But and I thought it was going to be something like a cruise. So I said, I need a break. I'd like to do that, too. So sign me up. The appointed day came. We got in the car. We drove to this former Catholic monastery on the coastline of Maine. And we walked in. And, of course, as you know, when you walk into a retreat, it's... we were walking into the last 2 weeks of the first three-month retreat. So everybody there had been in silence for 2.5 months. So we walked in, and everybody's walking around like snails, looking at their feet, wrapped up in blankets, and they wouldn't talk to us. Up to that point, I'd never met a meditator. I didn't know anything about meditation. I wasn't interested in meditation. I didn't know anything about Buddhism or spirituality. I was into the Grateful Dead and other supportive pharmaceuticals. I don't know why I happened to go to this retreat, because it wasn't on my horizon at all. But nevertheless, since I found myself there, I decided to sit through and do it. Well, survived. And as you know, the first retreat that you do can be quite interesting. You think that nothing's happening for 7 days, 8 days, 14 days. This was a 14-day retreat. Nothing was happening in 14 days. I was just in misery. The body was in excruciating agony, and the mind was all over the place, and I couldn't wait to get the heck out of there. And yet, when I went back to the commune, while everything was the same, same people, same place, same thing, same everything, everything looked completely different because of the transformation that had occurred in the mind. they were just much more sensitive and much more aware and noticing things and less defended, and the mind was so much more open that it was, well, shocking. I didn't do anything with that meditation for another year and a half, and when I got a notice that the people who had sponsored that retreat had bought a meditation center, or had bought an old center in Massachusetts and wanted to fix it up for holding retreats like that, I volunteered to go on staff. And one of the first days of being on staff at this retreat center, I was up in the attic of one of the dormitories with Rodney Smith, who was also on staff. And let me remind you, I'd sat for 14 days and had great depth of experience. And we were having a very spirited discussion on Nibbana. And I said to Rodney, he reminded me a few years ago that I told him this, I'd forgotten. I said to Rodney at that time, I have absolutely no doubt that in this lifetime I will realize the Dharma. And I didn't have any doubt either. Of course, I had no idea what I was talking about. I had no idea what was going to be involved. And I was completely uninformed. But I had faith. I had no doubt. And it points to an interesting fact about faith. Is faith is not always, or maybe not even initially, dependent on knowledge or wisdom. Because I didn't know what was involved, but I knew confidently within myself. And I would have to say that for most of my practice, I never had any doubt. I never had any doubt about myself. I never had any doubt about the teachings. Never had any doubt about the possibility. I had faith that the practice of awareness and the development of insight would do exactly as I was told, and that there was no reason I couldn't do it. Later on, I found some personal history that kind of got in the way and kind of bothered me for a while, but initially didn't have any doubt. Faith is an amazing thing. Faith can lead you to try, or it inspires you to try things that you don't know, you don't have any understanding of, but that you feel drawn to. And that was my relationship with insight practice, or mindfulness practice leading to insight. I guess I happened to be lucky, because I didn't really fall in with the wrong crowd and have my faith abused. We see. And it is possible to have a lot of faith in an unwise person or an unwise practice and to head off the rails in a very unhealthy, unskillful way. And maybe the example that some of us, I guess most of us at this age, would recognize is what happened in Jonestown, when you have this community of spiritual-minded people with a very charismatic leader with absolute faith in what he said to do. They did, and they all, nearly the whole community was committed suicide, really. Great faith, no wisdom. So you can see that faith can be a double-edged sword. Or let's say that faith needs to be balanced with some wisdom, some understanding. But all of us came this weekend, or all of us have come to practice, because there is some element of sadha. Faith, confidence, inspiration, in our life. And it's important for us to look at our own mind and to see what is it? What is it that allows us to make this tremendous effort to be mindful? It's not easy to be, well, it's not It's not complicated to be mindful, but it's not easy to be mindful in an ongoing way. So what is it that encourages you, that inspires you, impels you to do this? Because, you know, as I say, the rewards are not immediate, not always pleasant. We don't get, you know, just exuberant confirmation, you know, every time we sit down. And yet, some of you men and women, people, have been coming and doing these things for decades. They've been practicing for a long time. Why? One thing I've noticed in my own practice is that what gets you to practice won't keep you at practice. You know, we may get to practice for one reason, you know, like an accident, think you're going on a cruise. But but if you don't get something else, or if you don't re-inspire yourself or revitalize your faith or find something else to be confident about, you'll stop. And your practice will wane and it'll falter and you won't continue. And so faith is a growing, or confidence is a growing, it's alive, it's a dynamic thing in our life. It's not something you either have or don't have. It's something that we all have a little bit of. What we have faith in may change. How much faith we have in that may change. But it's a dynamic activity of mind, that as we become more aware of it and we pay attention to it, we can begin to monitor it. And we can see when in our own practice our faith is weak or our confidence is weak, and it undermines our practice. It undermines our energy. It undermines our continuity of awareness. It undermines our understanding. It makes us feel vulnerable, and we back off, and we, you know, take things casually, our own suffering, for example, or we find ourselves being a little cynical about some of our teachers, or there's many ways that weakening faith manifests. So I'd like to ask you, as a point of discussion, what is it that calls you to practice? What is it that inspires you to practice? What is it that, not what are you getting out of practice, but what is it that, well, got you here this weekend, or got you into practice, or keeps you in practice? That's a question.
Blind faith.
You know, blind faith gets people to practice. You know, some people read a book, see a person, you know, and they just go, wow, you know, something about that. And they go. Yeah, Steve.
I guess for me it's like I have a sense of inner change, and then I do tend to read a lot, read the words of Buddha, and I read Tibetan masters and what they write, and it seems like the subtle, very gradual in my case, but nonetheless, directional changes I see are in resonant with what I see they're talking about. And what they're talking about is also, actually, since I touched on two traditions where they actually completely harmonize, that's resonant too, so that's faith-inducing. It's two totally different parts of the world. Really, we're headed in the same direction, and I feel we're headed in that direction, and I don't see it's all, it's in the same thing.
So the element that I want to draw out of what you said was that you feel that you are aligned with what you have read, or masters that you have, whether it's the Buddha or Tibetan masters, and that you feel that you can be aligned with that, that you can be similar, or you can aspire to what you see within them, or what they have that you want. Okay. I'm going to come back to that point, but, yeah.
For me, it's really the excitement of discovery. I'm just really drawn into the learning.
Okay. So the excitement of discovery, so it's a, there's some tools or techniques here, or a kind of a, an invitation to discover something about yourself. Okay. I also want to come back to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty new to this, and I still don't understand it, but it's like when I don't meditate, it feels off. I start feeling off after a while. So that's mostly why. And then the hope of gaining awareness, and I don't feel it happen. It's kind of hope.
So you notice through practice that when you don't practice, you feel off.
Yeah, it's like exercise. You hate it when you do it, but...
It's worse when you don't.
Yeah.
I know that one. Yeah. Okay. There's going to be lots of opportunity for questions, and I hope that you'll all get an opportunity to offer something. Let me, because I remember what you just said. The other ones I'm going to have to be reminded. But sometimes we do things out of faith because it feels good. Feels good, right? You know, you do something, it feels good, we like it, we feel okay, we keep doing it, right? But let me ask you, as you acknowledge, how much of our experience of practicing awareness feels good? A lot of it feels miserable. Frankly, the body's uncomfortable and the mind is restless and you're sleepy and you're tired and the body's heavy and, you know, you can't focus and the mind is restless and it doesn't feel good at all. Does that mean that when those experiences happen, what then inspires you to practice? So here's a limitation. Here's a challenge. If our faith is dependent on feeling good, and I'm not limiting it to that, but just if that's one element of why we have faith, then what happens when you don't feel good? What happens to your faith? It might go out the window. Yeah. Now what was it you said? You said self-discovery. Yeah. Sure, right. That's good. Self-discovery is really good. You know, when you're really on the cutting edge of just opening to parts of yourself that you haven't seen before, some of which is exciting and some of which is dreadful. But nevertheless, there's a certain excitement, isn't there? You know, and that can, you know, you keep looking. What happens to that faith when practice gets really boring and nothing new is coming? And it's just slogging along the same old familiar turf. Hello. I mean, anybody had that experience? I mean, it seems like, how many times you gotta watch the breath before you know what the breath is? Okay, I got it. You know, keep practicing with the breath. Okay, so what happens to your practice when you lose the excitement of discovery? Or what happens to your faith? Well, we have to find something new to have faith in. We have to find something else in our practice to have faith in. Because practice is not always going to be pleasant, it's not always going to be exciting, or it's not always going to be discovering something new. And yet, something still keeps us practicing. Steve mentioned the what I want to kind of simplify as, you know, it's seeing and seeing the possibility or seeing the potential within himself that can be realized through practice that he's been exposed to through teachings of the Buddha or Tibetan teachers. And we see within ourselves a potential to which we aspire and that encourages us, or we have faith in our practice in order to move in that direction. This is not so different than a lot of the come-ons that you read in those little magazines at the checkout counter. At the grocery store, you know, improve your sex life, improve your mind life, improve your this, improve your that, improve, you know, and we can, you know, there's just endless self-help and self-improvement gurus and techniques and teachings available to all of us. What's the difference? Is practice really a self-improvement course of the highest order? Is that what practice is? Is that what inspires us? The idea of constantly improving till we get to be, well, what, a Buddha? Or a Tulku or something? I wanted to have this discussion because we all have reasons we practice. And they don't last very long. Those things last for a period of time and they get us into practice, but hopefully before those we see through the illusion of that which inspires or gives us faith to practice, something else has occurred in practice that encourages us to keep practicing. It's important that we keep asking ourselves this question. What is it that's inspiring me to keep practicing? What is it that I have faith in? Whether it's teacher, teachings, oneself, or just the history of your personal experience. Because it's so easy, as we know, to fall into a habitual routine, automatic pilot type of practice. It's so easy. You get a technique, you get a relationship with a teacher, you get your annual retreat that you do, and you're asleep. Asleep. Fulfilling your minimum requirement for qualifying for having a spiritual life. where did I read it? In the latest Buddha Dharma magazine. Mala Buddhist. I got on my malas, I like the Dalai Lama, I'm a Buddhist. anybody that's here is doing more than that already. But even this can become a comfortable blind spot. So how do we keep this faith alive? How do we keep faith vital? How do we recognize our faith in practice, our inspiration to practice, as something that's dynamic, that's growing, that's not stopped, it's not fixed. It's an activity of mind. It's a capacity of mind which we may have or we may not. Or it may be developed or it may be weak or it may be in balance or it may be out of balance. Yeah? Comments? Yeah. You.
I was ruminating over this, and I think what's kept me practicing is faith as opposed to faith in, because if I have faith in that I will not be bored, or faith that I will not be uncomfortable, or I will constantly be learning, those things come and go and then they pass. But faith without a faith in is more faith that this moment as it's being presented to me, this lifetime as it's being presented to me, is as it should be.
Faith in things are right in the world.
Yeah. I don't know about right in the world, but
my world.
Faith that whatever I am experiencing at this moment is how it is lawful, how it should be, even if it feels like it's something I don't want. I have faith that it is somehow right.
Thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
I should go ahead?
Yeah.
I was going to say that when you asked the first question, it was really kind of, I was going to say, like, the pleasure of solitude. And then you asked what happens when that pleasure evaporates. And then I realized that that's really when I need faith, is when the pleasure of solitude turns out into the agony of solitude. That's when I need to summon faith to keep going.
Yeah.
And for me, it's the fact that I've experienced in the past this agony of solitude being transformed into something that has being transformed into a kind of wisdom. I mean, wisdom not with a capital W, but a small lowercase wisdom.
Sure.
And it's kind of the faith that there's faith in this process that's going on, that it's leading to it's you know, that I'm in the stream. And so what I try to remind myself is it's not the pleasure of solitude is transformed into the agony of solitude, but I'm still in the stream. And as long as I'm still in the stream, that's cool.
Can I paraphrase? The Rich was saying that you know, his initial thought on what gives him faith is his love of solitude, you know, the pleasure of solitude. And then when I said, yeah, but pleasure doesn't last, and then he realizes that, oh yeah, there is the agony of solitude, and what provides him faith in that moment is the memory and the understanding from the memory of, I've been here before, and the result is beneficial. You know, I've been through difficult times in practice, and it's transformative somehow. And so there's some understanding, not necessarily capital W wisdom, but there's some understanding, personal understanding of your own process, and or his own process, that inspires him to keep there practicing even in the agony of solitude. And what he's saying is that his understanding, that some level of understanding, some level of wisdom supports faith. And this is a good point, because I think that's what I had said before, is that this is a cyclic process. It is a gradual cause-effect relationship among these five factors of mind. And when faith gets weak, you can look for wisdom or some level of understanding from your own personal experience to support what is a weakening faith. Yeah, good point. Yeah. You know, I'm going to ask one thing. Yeah, you just say your name, because some of you I don't know. Paul.
Bob.
Bob. I'm also deaf. So.
What keeps me going is the belief that in the immensity of what's out there still to discover. When things are going well, or struggling, or whatever, there's always more out there. I'm like Lewis and Clark.
Like Lewis and Clark?
There's more out there to discover. I haven't seen it all yet. And I want to.
Belief and desire. Okay. Belief. I believe this, and I want to experience or aspire to know it. Yeah, to discover it. That's a good motivation. How do you keep from getting exuberant and excited?
The world will do that to you.
And I ask that question because excitement undermines awareness. So how can we have faith and be inspired and energized, but not excited to the point of undermining our awareness? Huh? But certainly I know that, you know, wanting to be kind of the intrepid explorer that just explores the universe, the internal universe, or the mind sphere, and really comes to know it all. Yeah, that's also good motivation. Yeah, your name, please.
David.
David, hi, David.
Last night you said something that really struck me as one of the things that keeps me going, which is an awareness that things of this temporal world will not bring satisfaction, happiness. And one of the things that keeps me going is knowing that pursuit of the Dharma has the potential of having something much more satisfactory than achievement of the things that I've been striving for in this temporal world.
What is it that the Dharma is going to provide you? What do you think? How do you imagine it? What do you think the Dharma can offer you that is not temporal, is not bound up in time? Because just to acknowledge the obvious, Dharma experiences arise and pass away. You know, calmness, joy, bliss, excitement, confidence, lack of confidence, awareness, piercing clarity, effortless energy, they all come and go. So, what are we getting out of all this that is going to be beyond time or not shaken by the passing of time? something to really ask yourself. You know, are we meditating? Are we practicing for the feeling that comes, whether it's physical feeling, pleasant, mental feeling, pleasant, kind of personal aggrandizement feeling? Is there any feeling that we can get in through practice that is worth hanging on to? Because like, feelings come and go, all of them. There's none that's going to stay. So what is it that we're getting from all this effort, this practice, that is not going to arise and pass away? Yeah, Sheila.
The ability to be present and to understand, to really grok in Nietzsche.
Nietzsche being impermanence. Yeah. The ability to be present and to really understand impermanence. Great. Now, how long have you been practicing, Sheila? 20, 30 years, more, maybe.
No, close to 20.
Okay, 20 years. Now, after 20 years of practice, do you have the ability to be present on command? That's what I thought. Okay, so if it's not 20 years, how many years we got to go to get it? I can't either, you know. I mean, it's like on command. It's like, yeah, somebody's right there. Yeah, but I can't sustain it. I cannot sustain awareness, even now. So that's not what we're getting, because we're still, I mean, I have a lot of faith. I have unshakable faith in practice. Okay. What are we getting? Nothing. Great, finally. So nothing. No. And your name, please?
I'm sorry, Krista.
Krista.
For me, it's sort of, I'm surprised over and over by a different way of being in a situation that I would have handled differently. It's almost, I'm surprised that there's not so much of myself present in the situation that would have been really stimulating previously. So I'm just sort of surprised. And I like that feeling of, that's surprising.
Like, I'm different in this situation where I would have expected myself to be reactive?
Something's different. And something's different, and I couldn't will myself to not be that forceful, but, you know, or that opinionated or attached. But something's happening here, and it's like, So that sort of keeps me going, and sort of surprised. I'm surprised over and over.
Surprised by the transformation that takes place through practice somehow.
Look at the situation, how it would have unfolded previously. Or,
sure.
And how well it's not unfolding.
I like to suggest to people to add the little phrase for now, you know, as you experience something. Oh, this is the way it is for now. This is the way it is for now. Oh, I'm really surprised. Well, for now. I'm really excited by my practice. Well, for now. I have a lot of faith in practice. Well, for now. Because things are impermanent. Okay. Let's just sit quietly for 5 minutes, then we'll break for lunch.